Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, host of The Big Story, Canada's longest-running daily news podcast. For 6 years now, we've been telling one story a day, every one of them about something that matters to Canadians. This spring, though, we're going deeper. The Big Story presents Pay Dirt, the inside story of Ontario's Greenbelt scandal. From political games to stag and doe parties, endangered species, RCMP investigations, and Las Vegas massages, you will hear the full story straight from the people who broke it. The Big Story presents Pay Dirt. New episodes every Monday starting April 22nd, and you can get them all by following The Big Story wherever you get your podcasts.
Find your frequency.
Controversial subjects with the facts can be tense, but we are a sub-science here to make things make sense.
Today, we're talking about internalized homophobia. What is it and how does it affect both the queer community, but also people outside of it? Later on, we have our What Did You Learn This Week's as well. One is about palm oil and the country Mexico.
The whole country.
Or as we will learn, Mexico.
Ah, sí.
Controversial.
Señor. Not señora. Who knows?
Yeah. Actually, it's been interesting. Like, part of my What Did You Learn This Week comes from, like, I'm in a Spanish class right now, and there has been a lot of, it's not a brag. It's just me telling about my life, Greg. But part of the conversation around, like, you know, gendered words and how, like, the conversation even in Spanish has been like, do we change these terms? Like, there's been a pushback to, like, also try and find, like, gender neutral terms for certain words. But my teachers told me how, like, there is a literal body that examines the Spanish language and, like, decides, are we going to say this? Like, presidente. Yeah, but it was like when the president of one country was a female, she started saying presidenta. And then they were like, officially, we've decided you can't do that.
Also, like, if there's, like, 48,000 women and one man, you say...
Oh, yeah, you still say the, like, masculine version of, like...
Like, amigos.
Amigos, yeah, my friends, if there's only one man.
It's truly, like, a feminist, like,
anyway, I think
conference, and there's, like, one ally man, and it's like, oh, mis amigos are here. Whereas, like, if that man left, it'd be mis amigas.
Anyway.
That's a little rough. The, like, Spanish body could get together and, like, maybe be like, if visually you can tell there's more women.
Well, they've just, that's when the terms, I think one of the terms was, like, amigues, is, like, they've been trying to feel like, is there another term that can be, like, for everyone? But there's been a lot of conversation around that. Obviously, I'm not part of those conversations. I'm just hearing this through.
But this
Spanish
is how
teacher.
You get, like, the angry alt-right. Because you can't even speak Spanish the way we used to. Flipping tables. It's like, do you even know Spanish? Hola.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't even know why I yelled about that. Okay. So, yeah, let's get into it.
Okay.
Oh,
damn it. Wrong.
Okay, one sec.
Study time.
Okay, so for those who have been listening to the podcast recently, we have a new format and it's absolutely throwing us
into chaos.
Yeah. So have you heard What Did We Learn This Week? That was just a Spanish word for getting to study time.
Anyway, today we're talking about internalized homophobia. I know we've already
the
said
way
that.
You said even the intro, it's like so chipper. It's like
we're going to
so,
chat about
we're well, talking about how we hate ourselves.
No, Bing. I've been thinking about obviously, you know, our podcast many times is super lighthearted, and I think that's something that's nice about it. Even when we take on some like more intense topics, it's nice to be able to laugh at it, especially when we are kind of on the inside of that. So I feel like
you want to laugh at this.
No, but I guess I want to like start the conversation by being like, of course, we're always trying to be as accepting and open as possible, but I want to also be able to have fun. And because we're gay, I feel like at least this one we can like play with the idea of this. But of course, this is a serious conversation, a real problem in both the queer community.
I can't
and
stop
the
laughing. I don't know why.
And so we're going to be talking about what is internalized homophobia. And I think this is relevant to everyone, whether you're straight, gay.
It really is relevant to straight men who have been calling in a lot, and we love you and we
yeah,
see you.
Yeah, totally.
There's a lot of straight guys being like, hey, we're like I'm one of your straight listeners. I'm like, wow, it's like the only people who've called
in. I feel
in.
It's that and Australians. We're like, yeah, the two people we like.
People like getting like, you know, like domed and shamed. Like it's like Australians and straight men are like, yeah, they're like hate listening. Kidding. We love straight guys, but they're a huge part of internalized homophobia.
Well, I think everyone is affected by it, right? Like there's
wait, so
in the same way
it?
That everyone's affected by sexism. A lot of people are affected by racism, or everyone's affected by racism. Everyone's affected by homophobia. And I think internalized homophobia is often used as a term for queer person, like, and their reflection of society back onto themselves. So in that sense, I think its official definition is not like if a straight man's experiencing something like this, it's just homophobia, unless they actually are like repressing a gay part
of
themselves.
Well, I don't know. I feel like internalized homophobia is a bad term.
Yes.
It should be like internalized feminine phobia, because that's when it relates to straight guys.
Yeah. One of the studies that I was going to bring up, like there's a lot of conversation if around definitions.
Sorry. If you're internalized feminine phobia, if you're identifying as a man.
Say
right, because like I'm like, can women have internalized like, can women like hate their femininity?
Of course,
I just like went cross-eyed and passed out. I was like, okay,
what is
they
woman?
Obviously can, but now I'm like, damn, what's that called? And like, let's make an episode.
Internalized
on that.
Sexism.
Internalized.
So that's
sexism.
One of the terms that was used for this as an alternative, because first of all, whoa, even phobia is often considered a misnomer for homophobia. Like it's not a fear, it's actually a prejudice. And so one of the alternate terms for internalized homophobia has become internalized heterosexism, which is like sexism is obviously prejudice against women, and heterosexism is against gay people
who
queer
aren't
people,
hetero.
People who are not heterosexual.
But so much of this is about sexism. It's about hating the feminine aspects of yourself.
I think we can have a conversation around like that, of course, is true.
Yeah.
But there's multiple elements, right? Like you can have internalized sexism as well as feel prejudice for being outside of the norm sexually, like
being gay.
A gay man who's interested in men.
Gay.
Some of that may okay. not be because of sexism. Wow. Some of that self-hate can just because like you feel ostracized from society.
Yes.
So in terms of like definitions, a lot of it does come down to like self-afflicted homophobic, like society's homophobic views being self-reflected back onto you as a queer person. Most of the studies I found are like on lesbian, gay, and bi people. Like they often will say explicitly on LGB.
Yeah,
community.
Wait, I found that too.
I think because...
Oh, I think it's a transness is actually... Oh, wow. In this... Sorry. My study was about masculinity and how it relates to homo... What is this called? Internalized homophobia.
I know. I keep saying
like there's so many like homo words in my studies and like on my doc that I'm just like going cross-eyed at me like homo. But it was saying how like... I'll get to the point of mine, which is essentially that gay men who act more masculine, according to the study, have more internalized homophobia. Mm. But they were like trans people who, like, say you are like born like being like with the sex of a woman, but you are trans, so you are like a trans man.
Yeah.
Their taking up of masculine ideals makes them feel happier inside.
Right.
Whereas taking up of masculine ideals when you're a gay man, they're according to the study, makes you feel more depressed. So that's why, like, they were taking the T out of the LGB in this study.
Yes, it is. It is a different perspective.
Yeah.
The only thing I'd want to sort of not correct, but have a, like, obviously I don't know what your study is, but it's like, I think being masculine as a gay man can be toxic, but there are of course many gay men who would naturally maybe feel empowered by being masculine, and it's the question.
Oh, wait, well,
of,
I'm going to my study because it's interesting. Okay, but sure. It's just a study.
But you know what I mean. Of course, there are straight men who are masculine and some are feminine. There are gay men, some are naturally masculine and feminine.
Yeah, that's
it's
true.
Understanding, and what this conversation about internalized homophobia is going to touch on is it's the people who have that who are projecting masculine ideals and norms that end up often having these problems. But I'm sure there are many gay men who naturally are like, oh, I just like feel empowered by being more masculine, and it's not because of self-hatred.
Yeah, this
I think
study
it's worth
was
leaving
more
room for that.
Yes, but this study was saying if internalized homophobia is a complicated thing that you don't just necessarily accept in yourself or are just like, mm-hmm. I have it. Their point was if you are someone. Okay, I'll explain the studies. 489 Australian gay men. Red flag. Can't think of a more fucked up group. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm absolutely kidding. I need to go on an Australia like pilgrimage
tour. Yeah.
And just like be like, namaste. I love you all. I'm just going to go to Australia, tan, get dreads, do yoga, come back, love them. And everyone's just going to be like, yeah, but we hate you now. Okay. So 489 self-identified Australian gay men, 18 to 72 years old, online survey. And what they did would ask them questions like, does it bother you when you have to ask for help? And then on a scale of 1 to 5, you'd answer. The seeming sort of like takeaway from a question like that would be like, if you have an issue asking for help, you are quote unquote trying to be more masculine.
Okay.
So they're asking a bunch of questions that like, according to psychology, relate to how you feel about masculinity.
Okay.
And then they're finding, they're using a bunch of other questions that are talking about internalized homophobia and the way you feel about it. And they found that people who are presenting as more masculine have higher rates of internalized homophobia. They have more feelings of hatred towards the fact that they are gay and towards other gay people. So their point was not saying that, of course, there are, as you said, masculine gay men who don't have internalized homophobia, but they're like, if we're trying to figure out who has it, who doesn't, because it's like not something that people necessarily like I would love if someone could just like read me to filth and be like, you have it at this measure so I can like work on it.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, if you are a masculine presenting gay man, you are more likely needing to check your
That's
internalized homophobia, which I think is really interesting because it's like, I think as gay people, because of all the things we're going to get into, masculinity is idealized, and maybe you look at masculine gay men like me last week just like ripping the shit out of a bunch of like topless roided up like lawyer bankers, gay banker, white bankers from Toronto.
Wait, what are you talking about?
I was making
last week
I made a joke about how like when you go to like gay male parties, like some of them, you literally talk to them and I'm like, why are you a football player steroided gay man who is like a lawyer on Bay Street who's white, and like you are the most masculine archetype of high school, but you're gay. Like,
right.
I was kind of ripping on that, like those people, but it's like, actually there's another way to frame it, which is like, they might be struggling the most.
Fair.
Which I think is interesting because I look at those people and I'm like, oh my God, they're so, I have like, oh my God, it's like, is it, we're going to get into it. I'm like, is it internalized homophobia? Like it could be a version of it, but I have some sort of like animosity towards them. Mm. Whereas if like, according to the study, it's like, oh, they actually might be struggling the most with their homosexuality. Mm. It gives you a little bit more like
compassion.
Like when you look at the circuit case, it's like, aw, you know what I mean? Whereas usually when you look at like really masculine, white, strong men, it's easy to be like judging them.
Yeah.
That's all that this study made me be like, that's so interesting.
Yeah,
and it gives compassion.
It is worth thinking about. I think because we live like personally in a circle surrounded by like many gay men, we're in a bubble. And as a result, we kind of do forget that many people actually do experience homophobia explicitly, right? Like, of course we experience it implicitly in the world, but like in our day-to-day life, like I don't experience a lot of homophobia. I live in Toronto, a super progressive city. We go to gay bars. We're surrounded by queer people all the time. What I'm trying to say.
That one time I was on the subway and that guy was like,
Are you fucking?
Yo, yeah. Why are you looking at me, faggot? And I was like, oh. And I like kind of laughed because he looked gay. Like, not to like judge him, but remember he had gorgeous, like blue dyed hair and he looked, and it just came out of nowhere. Yeah, it was wild. Spooky. I always think about that. I'm like, so it can like randomly think of things happen. Like
that. I think it's a good reminder to think that some people's internalized homophobia and projection of toxic masculinity is obviously a defense mechanism to actually protect themselves. Even though that may not always be the case, it obviously bleeds into like being actually in the queer community or around gay people, and it's still there. And that's when you're like, you don't need to put this front up. But I think a lot of people outside of like Toronto in this world are actually oppressed, even as
gay
men.
So they're acting more masculine to
as a protective
them.
Tool, right? Like, so I think that's, a worth thinking. Like, a lot of people live in fear. And I think that, like, there's an entire category of stress called minority stressor, which is related to internalized homophobia. That's like, if you're a minority in any way, you have, like, different kinds of stress. So this is, it says, like, stress theory posits that stressors are any factors or conditions that lead to change and require adaptation by individuals. Minority stressors strain individuals who are in a disadvantaged social position because they require adaptation to an inhospitable social environment, such as LGB persons' heterosexual social environment. So,
what? I went cross-eyed.
That's okay. Sorry, that was just a lot of random words. All to say that simply being a queer person
is bad.
Simply
I'm kidding.
Being a minority. So whether that's because you're in a space where you're like a gendered minority or you're a racial minority, you will experience literal stress because of that, that people who are in quote unquote the norm or the majority don't have. And these things are often like measurable in studies. Like, there are literal stressors that your body faces by being in an environment where you are a minority.
Okay. I see. So it's like, okay, so being gay is hard.
It is, but I think going back to my point, we live in a bubble where it's obviously inside that
bubble.
It's very easy to just have fun and be like, you can be free. You can be yourself. You don't have to judge yourself.
We are in Toronto. So I think our bubble is that white gay men experience an extreme amount of privilege.
Totally.
I think that's like another aspect where it's like hard to talk about these studies and talk about the world because like in Toronto, for example, like we're such a, like there's so many new immigrants. There's so many other issues that I'm like, and there's obviously a lot of queer people who are like people of color who experience a lot of issues here, but like, it's not like I'm thinking about white gay men's homophobia
and
when
like
I think
suffering.
Of all the issues in Toronto that I'm like trying to figure out how to help.
Yes.
So it's like, I think, but then I'm like, the worldwide, it's like,
the judgment on that category.
Yeah.
And I'm just playing devil's advocate only to be like, of course we should also have sympathy because that usually comes from somewhere. And I mean, even straight men have to face this pressure to
so
be
that's the
masculine.
Thing. Like, I'm like, this study was so interesting because they're obviously like any science study, they like have to write all the information before they do the study. And it was like full of such cool links to other studies, but it's just like masculinity is so messed up. Like AOC is on this. Like she's so well, cause like everyone's always like talking about how men are struggling. And AOC is like the person who I'm always like, she's tackling it from the way that like science and psychology is like, yeah, it's because of masculinity.
I actually haven't like, I feel like she's kind of been quiet lately, although I don't use Twitter anymore, and I'm just like, is that why I don't hear about her that much?
I hope to God she's not just on Twitter.
No, I know that's not true, but I feel like I used to. Oh, and maybe, you know, people come in waves in terms of like
their
cultural.
Hope she's just like ramping her ass up to be president, my friends.
Isn't there like an age minimum that she?
Well, I don't know, because right now it's like 90 plus and that's only allowed.
I think you have to be like 40 or something. I don't know, but so it's like hopefully she
in
will.
In Chile, it was 35 because I remember their new president was like 37 and I love him. Okay, so like men, like in the Western heteronormative context, it's just so Western. It's like, goddamn British and your colonization. If only you realized how weak you are, didn't try and take over the world. Women are quote unquote expected to be passive, emotive, and sentimental, whilst men are supposed to be stoic, brave, and aggressive. That's the stereotype of like Western heteronormative context of like gender.
Okay.
And it's like, even just those words, like, it's like when we learn about mental health, it's like stoic, brave, and aggressive. It's like, you're going to struggle.
Yeah.
And so then it's like,
It's like, it's an act.
And it's also like, those are the bad ones. Like passive, emotive, and sentimental. Like those are the ones that like psychology is like, those aspects are like what make you feel less depressed. Anyways.
I think it's worth mentioning that things are not inherently good or bad. It's the inauthenticity of them, right? Like, I think being brave, being masculine, being these terms, when they're fake is when it's toxic. But of course, it's like, I think this is the harder conversation to have, because it's like, well, being masculine inherently isn't a bad trait. It's just that it gets like almost weaponized.
Well, okay, let me continue, because it's like the heteronormative Western context polarizes these ideas between masculinity and femininity. So no, it's like all those things mixed is good. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's what, like, if you keep
going, we can accept that, like, those traits are good in all different ways. Is that what you mean? But
no, I'm saying, like, obviously women aren't just passive, emotive, and sentimental. Right. That's false. And men aren't just stoic, brave, and aggressive. Those are all, if you polarize those two, they're not good. Yeah,
believe they must
Although
be
Although my personal opinion is, like, I'd rather be the feminine one from a mental health perspective. Maybe I'm exaggerating, whatever. But it's, like, the point is that that's not true. There's, like, no, women are also stoic, brave, and aggressive.
Of course, yeah.
But the point is that society forces this polarization. And then what it does is it creates like maladaptive behaviors in men, straight men and gay men, to overcompensate. And they fear like the feelings of inferiority. And when essentially if you fear femininity, what ends up happening is that they're like the fear of femininity leads to increased competition, increased depression. And what I found so interesting is that they really focused on this. It creates a fear of taking risks in men. A fear of femininity creates a fear of taking risks in men because they're scared of their femininity showing.
I see.
And so, I was like, that is so interesting. I'm in an art class. I'm in a Spanish class, all full of women. And I'm like, I think men are scared to do things
that could be perceived as feminine.
And like, I'm not even saying taking a Spanish class is perceived as feminine, but there's a risk there. You have to go. Mm. You have to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
Like, it's actually so interesting. There's like three men in my Spanish class, and it's like, I look at them and they get like called. They have to be subservient to the teacher. The teacher's like, how do you say that? And they kind of stumble and they get it wrong and they blush. Mm-hmm. And it's like that they're reacting differently to the mistake than the women are. Mm. Like they're like, when I was reading this study, because it was right before class, I was like, that man is like blushing.
Right.
Because he said, like, como esta instead
right.
of
estas. And he's probably been taught, not he, but just in general, men are you saying men are taught?
Well,
like,
it's a mistake. It's like, it's
and
like,
needing help.
Yeah. And it's
those
like,
kind of things
there's something
are feminine qualities.
And emotive about like being like, oh, I got it wrong and vulnerable. Yeah. And it's like a lot of issues with men that we have talked about a lot on this podcast, especially like men who retire. It's like they deteriorate because they're not like going out and like getting new hobbies, and like they're scared. Yeah. And it's like so interesting because it's like this study is saying it's like that fear is maybe of being perceived as feminine or weak. Like and I was like, that like resonates for me. Like there's something that I feel so happy that I get to be a gay man because I have accepted this feminine part of me that I like do all these crazy things. I take a bunch of risks because I'm like, when I show up, no one, well, maybe they're like gay and I'm like, yeah, like there's something that like, there's a power in that like
you can own.
I think
men
would be helpful for men to understand, like getting in touch with their femininity actually will make them less fearful. And fear is like a weirdly like almost feminine trait. Like it's almost like paradoxical in some way.
I don't agree with that last part, that fear is a feminine trait.
Sorry, I'm saying they're like, I just feel like men don't want to be perceived as people who are fearful.
Yeah.
Sorry, these men who are masculine.
Sure.
I'm just like, it's interesting. It's like, no, you're actually, your fear is your fear of femininity.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm just like, that's interesting to me.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like I'm saying like,
that's interesting. I don't know why, like, you lost me at the end, but.
But just being like, I don't know why I'm harping on this, and maybe let's just move on, but it's like, oh, you're scared? Like being scared is probably something they're like, no, I'm not scared. It's like, you are scared of being feminine. The word scared is in that statement. It's like, you know what I mean? There's a bravery. There's a masculinity. There's a stoicness in accepting your femininity. Because it's like the ultimate conqueror of fear.
I think, and this is going to be a generalization as well, but obviously certain domains of like intellectual pursuit are considered feminine. And I think in a way, you know, like many like men who go into academia, like, and not into like sport or like physical or aggressive spaces are considered more feminine. But in my personal experience, this is not based on a study, this is anecdotal, like when I think of like my male professors in general, of course there's like toxically masculine ones, but I feel like academic men have come to terms and are maybe more comfortable and okay having feminine attributes.
Yeah, yeah.
Same as gay men.
Now we can go back to the internalized homophobia, because the gay men thing is wild.
This reminds me a lot of like the in-group, out-group conversation we had the other week.
Yeah.
When we talked about even, what was our last episode on diverse
neurodivergence,
where it's like, okay, there's like a conversation that the whole world can have. And in that stance, I'm like, no, gay men are oppressed in this world. But then when we come into the inner conversation, I'm like, yeah, but gay men are so privileged. So let's like acknowledge that. And that's where our maybe sometimes judgment of internalized homophobia comes. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
Like on the larger scale, I'm like, there are lots of issues. And now we're going to like, because you're like, yeah. And then I start talking about gay men and I'm like,
nah, okay. But then now I'm like, is that internalized homophobia? So, okay. Do you think you have like, how bad is our internalized homophobia?
Yeah, it's there for sure. Sometimes I wonder for myself if like, not that I am completely straight passing, but I grew up more straight passing than some. Like
than me?
Than this little homo over here.
Wow. No. And you're immediately canceled. Press that button. Press that button.
Which one is
canceled?
Sorry. I don't think I was straight passing because I was constantly called gay in high school. But like, I think.
No, you're straight passing, but then you were like, no, what I'm going to do? Make musical theater my whole personality. And then it's sort of like, okay.
But I wonder if internalized homophobia, it's like chicken or egg. Is it harder to break free from that when you can mask yourself? No, like pun intended, like M-A-S-K. Whoa. Or M-A-S-C.
Put that on a shirt and smoke
mask
it.
For mask. Versus if you are innately exuberant and feminine and outgoing as a man, you might just have to accept that and you're like no longer trying to hide. I'm not sure. This is just
no, this is so that perhaps
like I know for sure I have internalized homophobia. I mean, I think most
I think
people
every the world
gay do.
Man does.
Yes.
I think you every gay man has internalized homophobia and every man has internalized heterosexism and mm-hmm. fear of femininity. And I think that's just because and what these studies are saying, again, if you're in a Western environment in a heteronormative context, which everyone in Canada, certainly Australia and America. Wow. If you're meaner to Australia than America, it's like, you know, like, I'm so sorry. You make fun of the people who you can. You guys are fine. Have these issues. And I think that there's a scale of it. But I think one thing that is interesting, again, going back to the study, is that feminine acting gay men will receive, and it does say in the study, receive the most hate and the most, like what you were saying, like minority stress. Mm-hmm. And they are essentially having like harder lives in general, but they might not have as much internalized homophobia,
right.
Which is what this study is talking about, which is the hatred of yourself and being gay, the hatred of the feminine aspects and the fear of the feminine aspects of yourself. It causes you to become quote unquote straight acting, become anti-infeminate, anti-effeminate. And that can be such a huge issue because it's like a little bit more hidden maybe than like the people who are experiencing like vitriolic like these are acts that they're having to deal with. Whereas internalized homophobia, you might go your whole life without ever addressing it.
Totally. It's
you
less
don't have
explicit.
To. Yes.
It's difficult to know. I think even I think like you said, every gay man has internalized homophobia, but of course there's scales. I have two things to say. One, I'm going to bring up my study, which has like three, it was really interesting. It looked at like what is internalized homophobia. Cause that's like a big conversation.
Yeah.
Like what is actually causing it? And then, what does it do to a person who has it? But what was I going to say?
One thing like my study used an example of was like, do you dislike Drag Race?
No.
Yeah. It was one of the questions.
Like,
and
are
I was
you
like,
a gay man?
I was like, I'm like becoming the gay guy that I'm like, I fucking hate Drag Race, but I swear it's because it's repetitive. Like, I'm
sure,
like,
Greg.
I know. I was built, made sure. Me think. Like, if I was on the study, I would have been like, I would have put a 3. But it's like, damn, I would have been like, yeah. I was like, is my, like, I literally after was like, someone like asked me about Drag Race. I was like, love it. Because I was like, I don't. Like, I'm like, I am sick of it, but I'm like, I don't want it. Like, it was kind of like made me question, like, why am I hating Drag Race? But anyways, it just makes you think, like, there are actually gay men who I think from day one have had a hard time with, like, a show that prides a femininity.
Yes.
And,
yeah, like, yeah, that almost every cast member is an effeminate
It was just,
man.
Like, so I read the surveys, and when I saw that question, I was like, that's an amazing question. Like, do you like Drag Race? Like, in a literal study.
Do you think one of us has more internalized homophobia, or it's just in different ways?
Okay, another thing this study... Well, I really like this study. Okay, so I just want to say this. Having internalized homophobia, they said, does lead to intense anxiety and body shaming and body dysmorphia.
Okay.
So the direct correlation to that is interesting because I think people go to the gym. Hello, gay men. It's like, we're
definitely
sick.
Yeah.
Like the going to the gym part is about building your body. And I sometimes think about like how interesting it is that all sort of like the jocks in my high school are like truly just like living the quintessential like drink beer every night, like have their like dad gave them a job and they don't, they look, and all the people who ended up gay are absolutely jacked now. Like, it's just like, it's like, I just imagine all those like jocks going through their phone being like, holy shit, like every
little gay nerd
guy I made fun of could like kick the shit out of me now. So there's like something like really interesting there that I was like, whoa, it's like, it's gay men trying to deal with their internalized homophobia through making their bodies seem masculine. But I think that they were like, it is an ebb and flow. Like, you can have internalized homophobia that pulsates, goes away, pulsates, goes away. They said with age, it usually gets better. Hashtag it gets better. Like, you decrease your internalized homophobia as a gay man, usually if you come out with age. And their main way they say to combat it is exposure to, literally it said, effeminate people. So whether that's hanging out with more women or hanging out with more effeminate gay men, that's where my judgment of some masculine gay men comes from. Fair. When you look at them and you're like, you're all hanging out with each other, there's no women even in the mix here.
Yeah,
like there's an obsession with masculinity that I think is like, they're like, the antidote to internalized homophobia is truly hanging out with women and gay men who are effeminate and can accept themselves. Yeah. That's what their discussion answer was.
Well, I think
was.
That's also why just like even being around people who are like non-binary or trans, like challenging these ideas of what does it even mean to be a specific gender is interesting. It opens your eyes to being like, okay, like we can deconstruct gender, and then that makes it easier, I think, to deconstruct masculinity. But it's difficult at the same time because these subgroups, like the queer community in general, has so many subgroups that, and that's amazing in a lot of ways. Like it's really cool that we can celebrate. We have like bears and twinks and all these different things, and like that's nice to be like, there's like everyone's sexually interested in a certain type of person.
This study also went in a bit on the
You're obsessed.
I'm obsessed.
Study.
Well, because it was so specific. No, it was obviously done by like gay men. It was like, so they went in a bit on the bear community. They
because
think that the bear community, the way it presents itself, could be a problematic aspect of internalized homophobia, which I was just like, that's really intense thing to say. But
I think it's important to always say can be, right? Yes, like, because for example, like there are just people who are naturally, whether it's their lifestyle or their genetics or whatever, are just like naturally going to be a bear. Because like, even when you like have chest hair, like if you're like, if you have no chest hair, you're like not really called a bear. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like a bear is like a hairy big man or whatever. So like some of this is just like naturally what you are. And it's trying to like decipher. I think this is why these kinds of studies are interesting, but also it's such a challenge because how do you parse apart? Were you quote unquote naturally born this way, or are you projecting?
Not beautiful in my way, because God makes no mistakes.
Gaga
I'm
had
on
it
the
right.
right track.
Okay. Wow, Gaga solved internalized homophobia.
Yeah, she really didn't. Okay, but my answer to your question about let's talk about who has more internalized homophobia is that it goes in and out, and that like, for example, you could have a time in your life where you're spending more time with gay men only who are masculine, and then you're gonna have more internalized homophobia.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden you get a job and you're hanging out with women and you're hanging out with more effeminate gay men, and your personality changes and you have less internal. They were like, it will change.
Yeah.
There's the macro, the exo, which is society, the meso, which is your greater community, the micro, which is your close relationships, and the self. So I don't think it's finite.
Yeah, and I'm sure it manifests different for everyone. So that for some people, it might manifest in sculpting their body to look hyper-masculine. In some people, it might express in the way they actually treat people or act to people. Like we may have totally different versions of internalized homophobia.
Okay, so in this moment, as in like this week or this, who do you think has more internalized homophobia? That's what I mean. I would say like in the past, for sure, you had more.
Yeah. Like I grew up in a religious household. I think that also plays a role.
A
religious household. Because you're like reminded that to be gay is also a literal sin.
And you have like a masculine dad and like a feminine mom.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. Like prototypical roles. Like it's a very heteronormative family.
Family, yeah.
And I grew up in a smaller place, like a small town.
Literally. Yeah, I have like intellectual Toronto CBC parents. Like I just like, think innately the answer would be obvious, but I think now
it's you.
Yeah. Well, I was like, I'm like, I don't hang out with enough people, period.
Yeah. True.
Like, I'm like, I just feel like there was a time in my life where I was so much more surrounded mm-hmm. by women and like effeminate gay men. Whereas now I'm like alone. Mm-hmm. And I just go to the gym a lot. And everyone at the gym, I'm like, well, that's not like the people, like,
right, who are the right influence to hang out with.
So yeah. Then I was kind of like, but I'm like, you also go to the gym. Yeah, I don't know if it's obviously is me now, but I'm like, I'm certainly like, this study made me be like, Greg, go hang out with your girlies, get off the couch, mm-hmm. and put on your nail polish.
I think the gym is a shield that people use because it's a way to appear more masculine, but say it's for health. And of course, that's why it's difficult.
Ooh,
it's like,
wait, say that again.
Health is important. Like going to the gym is a good thing in general. Like, yeah. I'm not saying everyone has to do it, but it's like on the surface, it's like I'm doing something not because I want to be straight. It's because I want to be healthy.
So healthy. Yeah.
It's good for
as
my body.
As you inject yourself with steroids, eat so much protein
not
that
everyone's
kills you
doing
and look
that.
Like a gorilla. Well, okay. Sorry.
There's lots of people outside of that category who are trying to go to the gym. And so I think that's like one of those difficult things to parse out. It's like, it is good for you. Like yeah. lots of people use the gym for their mental health. Lots yeah. of people use the gym to feel good, to have energy, all these things. But I think it also allows gay men in particular, because we see this like body issue where it's like, you know, no femmes, no fats, no whatever is like the phrase that gets used on like Grindr and stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's like protective because you get to be like, I'm doing it for me, but it can yeah. also be behind your mind that you're ignoring that it's for something else.
One thing that I do if anyone's ever like, are you masked? I'm like, that is the most fucked up question, and I block them.
Oh, yeah. No, that's
so I always feel good doing that. I'm like, well, now I feel bad because they actually just have internalized
homophobia.
No, but that,
I think it's worth like, it is a problem. Lots of people don't do this, but it is a problem in the gay world where like, if you don't look jacked, if you don't act hyper-masculine, you're not attractive to a certain group of people.
Yeah.
And I do think that's really toxic yeah. for everyone involved, especially yeah. the person
that
who's
is internalized
it.
Homophobia too.
And then, yeah, exactly.
But that's a really powerful way to look at it because it's like, then you can be less...
It's sad for the person.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's sad for the person. It still doesn't mean that that question is appropriate. And I still think it's okay for me to say that's a fucked up question and block them.
Yeah.
But I
think
I
so
do
too.
Think
but
that
then
there's
you can
a part
also
of me
pause.
That's like, oh, is there another way that's like, oh, I'm so sorry you asked that question.
Yeah.
But that's also so condescending.
I think you don't have to take responsibility for it.
No, I don't.
You can just be internally like, but well, that's
do you think
sad.
It's like I have more internalized homophobia now literally because I have an Equinox membership.
Yes.
But it's like you go to a trainer.
Yeah.
But that's less... Like, I'm like,
no,
I'm
you're
like,
right.
Do you actually think it's me? Like, a part of me wanted to like say, yeah, it is me because it's like funny. But, and it's like, there's a change, but I'm actually like, I don't actually know.
Life's too complicated for me to understand. Like
yeah.
the reasons we do things can be so hidden to us. Like there's so many more layers, right? Like, of course, toxic masculinity and internalized homophobia affects us, but so does like the need and desire to feel loved and accepted and
yeah.
good at things and successful. Like there's so many layers that you're like, which one is it? Which
yeah.
fucked up desire is it that's driving me to do the things that I'm doing?
Yeah. But I know that I definitely have internalized homophobia.
Of course.
And I do feel like there was a time in the past where I like honestly like didn't.
I think my study that I'm going to bring up right now is going to help us elicit a specific idea about ourselves.
Okay.
Because this
they're
was
like and it is that you're gay.
You hate Drag Race, you go to the gym,
you go to Equinox. I hate Drag Race and I go to Equinox. It's like, yeah, you're fucked. You have internalized homophobia.
Okay.
I don't hate Drag Race. I'm just like, come on, let's just like maybe make less of them. Okay.
Or
continue.
Like give us a shake it up somehow.
Yeah.
Or I actually don't know, you're right. There's This has been on for a long time.
Yeah.
But like if a straight man's like, oh, that's what I'd be like, it's a great show.
Actually, to be honest, the only people I know who are obsessed with it like in a really intense way are like straight people now, because it's like they're experiencing it new.
For the first time.
Whereas I'm like, oh, I've seen 48,000 episodes. I like look at them and my eyes go blurry and I'm like, what year are we in? Like I've seen this before.
Okay. So when defining internalized homophobia, this study came out in 2018. There were three correlations. They call it three subscales that were the strongest. Okay. So subscale number one was the desire to be heterosexual.
Never in a million years would I want that.
Exactly. Well, maybe when you were younger.
But the weird thing now like, I'm like getting attracted to women. Okay.
Okay. We'll get there when we get there.
What's that called when you hate me because I might like women, some women?
I did not ever say that.
You always judge me. Okay, but now I'm like, I am questioning. Okay, you want to know the truth? Wanting to be
homophobic? This is the same projection. It's me when you look at gay men being internalized homophobia. Yeah. It's me going like, are you trying to be so progressive that you are making yourself less gay?
Are you serious? That's so rude.
This is the joke. Did you ever watch Broad City? You know when she's like, Alana, you're so progressive that you're racist. Like, it's kind of like that sometimes.
No, I know it's genuine. I think that it's like people are forced into binaries, and I was forced into the binary of being gay. And then sometimes I
think it's good. Women. It's a good thing. You're right. It is my internalized issue with it probably that projects my feeling to you. But sometimes it's like you're being so progressive.
And have you ever gone to lesbian parties? It's like a lot of those girls are so hot.
Fair. In a masculine, that's something that this conversation has lacked, obviously, because we're two gay men. I'd be interested to hear a lesbian's take on like lesbian masculinity and if that's internalized homophobia or not.
Oh, I need to hang out with more lesbians.
I mean? I'm curious about the conversation in there.
So do you desire to be heterosexual?
That's like the first one. So that's negative feelings and homophobic attitudes towards oneself as a product of social bias against sexual minorities. And the quote they use is, I feel that being gay is a shortcoming for me.
Okay. No, I absolutely think it is a 1000% a superpower.
And but you know what I mean? When you were young, like we all had to face that feeling. Like when I was younger, I was like, I wish I was straight.
I definitely was in grade 7 and 8 when everyone was like, fuck it. I was like, well, that sucks. And definitely when I started like masturbating to gay porn, I was like, well, that's wrong. But then like as throughout high school, actually, this is interesting. And as soon as I came out in grade 11, I was like, it's my superpower. And I like you, and I really would loved it. But I do think there's something there too, which was that like, I almost loved it too much. Like it was sort of like, it didn't allow me to fully address.
Fair. You tried to use it as a weapon to protect yourself.
To protect myself against homophobia. Mm-hmm. Which is like, which is a useful skill, but making me like so confused.
That's that same thing when therapists are like, it was a useful tool.
Yeah, it was a useful tool. Now it's like, no, Greg, you're actually straight. I'm kidding.
Okay. Subscale two reflects.
Wait, sorry, answer that. Do you deep down wish you were straight?
No, not anymore. Okay. No, yeah.
But was there a time?
For sure. Yeah. Like when I was like dealing with, am I gay?
You came out like,
Once I came out was my accepting and being like, I would rather like maybe the first year was still that like being uncertain, but I was kind of, you know, like we were dating before I even came out.
Did you start by saying I'm bi?
I think probably. Yeah.
Cause that's probably like a bit of
I didn't ever come out as bi. I came out as gay, but I think in my mind before I came out as gay, I was like, I like both guys and girls.
Yeah.
I just never want to touch a girl sexually.
Yeah.
Okay. So, no, I don't feel that way now at all. If I had a magic wish granted, I would never wish to be straight.
And again, we are, to our straight listeners, we're so sorry.
Oh, yeah. No, it's not because I think being straight is
never wish to be Australian. I'm kidding.
Okay. Subscale two reflects fears of coming out. Quote, if my straight friends knew about my sexual orientation, I would feel uncomfortable.
What? Isn't that kind of the same as the first one?
No, the first one is like, I don't want to be gay.
And the second one is, I'm gay, but
I'm
don't.
Afraid of what being gay does to me in this world.
Whoa.
Like, I
again,
have fear.
No, I walk into a room, I'm like, by the way, I'm gay, so bow down. Like, I do find I'm like, I want everyone here to know I'm gay.
Yeah.
Like, and when I'm like.
But I would say, as somebody.
Well, I act extra gay in new situations.
Yeah, I do too, because I'd rather not have to, like, explain it. But there's still, obviously, as a queer person, you have to be in, if you're in a room with new people, you're like, there's a moment where people have to find out. I remember when I went on Big Brother being like, you have to like share beds with someone. And I was just like, I don't want to be beside a straight man before they know I'm gay, unless they're explicitly like, I'm okay,
okay
with
you're
that.
So insane. Like, I love how you actually get to have an anecdote from like the most fucked up experiment.
But that because the first 24 yeah. hours, no, that's like so you're interesting. In a room with 16 new people.
Oh my God, if I went on Big Brother, I would definitely open the door and like, isn't there like a meme of a girl like coming out of the door? I would be like, hello! Like,
because just, we're different in that way. And there was another guy on my season who was more flamboyant than me. And it was like, everyone was up. He was like wearing a dress on the first episode.
So you were just like mumbling like, I'm gay too.
Well, I would be like trying to like let my gayness out. But you're also meeting people for the first time. So you're just trying to like, I wanted to make sure I was like sleeping beside a girl. And then being like, nah, I'm gay. But in the first 24 hours, people were like, we didn't know if you were gay, Mitch.
Wait,
but
you have to sleep beside people? That's weird.
There's only enough, like, there you share, like, a double bed
that's
with a stranger.
Like, that show's so fucked okay, up. You anyway. Got, you're so fucked up. We've like, been, that's crazy. We gotta they're allowed to make more beds. You know what I mean? Like, Big Brother, like, good Lord. Like, I didn't even think about that. You STI ass show. Continue.
STI.
I don't know. They want you to bang.
Okay. Subscale 3 measured worries about stereotypes based on sexual orientation. So, quote, when I think about coming out to a straight friend, I worry that he or she might watch me to see if I do things that are stereotypically homosexual. So it's not about the fear of them disliking you for being gay, but it's the fear of being, like, boxed in by people seeing you as gay.
Okay.
So basically what this study,
me.
Yeah. So those were forms of internalized homophobia they were evaluating. Mm-hmm. But what they realized is only the first one, the desire to be straight or not be gay, was associated with mental health issues. Mm. The other ones are kind of like minority stressors. They're inevitable, right? Like as a gay person or a queer person, you have to come out to people and have fear around, will they treat me differently? Should I be scared? Will I have less opportunities? But by the people who had the idea, like, I wish I was straight, basically, both at baseline and in longitudinal studies, that was like linked to mental health outcomes where the other ones weren't, which I thought was interesting. So for this study, they recommend that the desire to be heterosexual should be what internalized homophobia is classified as.
Okay.
Is what they were basically studying.
Well, mine is saying it's like, this study argues that gay men who are overly concerned with masculine norms utilize hypermasculinity as a compensatory strategy for their perceived sense of inferiority. Mm. So obviously, like you're saying, you would have to answer yes to one of those three questions to have a perceived sense of inferiority around being perceived as gay. Mm-hmm. And this study is just saying that that actually causes gay men to present in hypermasculine ways. Mm-hmm. And it is, it's like, I can now get that. You're presenting in a hypermasculine way in theory to fear.
Like to protect yourself from these fears.
But then I think this is not addressing is that there is something else in the gay community, which is that people are acting hypermasculine in order to like
attract each other.
Yes. In order to like, it's actually not about straight people. Mm-hmm. It's like gay men have become so fucked up that they've now created that fear around each other, perceiving each other as feminine, which is like really actually very sad.
That's because the darkest part. Is where you should be safest and you still feel unsafe. And actually, as a result, you're contributing to an environment that is unsafe for queer people.
Exactly. And it's like, and you're maybe so shrouded in this like internalized homophobia, so unaware of it, that you're like hurting yourself and others without an awareness, which is like, to me, the scarier part, the sadder part.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's not actually, I think, these people's fault, because they're not really like necessarily looking at it that deeply. That's just like the feelings they have. And the feelings they have are actually so sad, because it's like they're from the hatred that you felt for being gay, that you maybe still feel, and like that probably dealt with you growing up.
One thing I would say, this is anecdotal in my own thoughts about like that group of people who are hypermasculine and looking for hypermasculinity. I think part of it is a sexual fetishization of the idea of being masculine. So it's not always about who and what you are in your life. It's like, I want to hook up with someone who feels straight. Obviously there is like, for many gay people and even feminine gay people, like joke sometimes about like, it's a toxic thing about being like, oh, I want to hook up with a straight guy. Cause there's something like, hot about that. Hmm. And so I think, because the irony to me, and I don't mean this to be like overly judgmental, but a lot of times you go to those, like, if you're in an event where you're with like a lot of jacked bros who are like sexy and trying to act mask, you like talk to them and you're like, oh, you're still so gay. You know what I mean? You're still very feminine.
Oh my God, I was
In many ways, it's a projection of what they want to be and what they're looking for sexually.
This study that I like, I'm gonna marry, is like maybe being like, it is those men who are acting so gay, who are presenting the most hypermasculine, because that is what it's saying. It's saying you might have more internalized homophobia. You might have experienced more homophobia, which has caused you to go down this route of hypermasculinity, because growing up, you maybe were like actually made fun of so deeply that you course corrected.
Totally.
So it's like maybe even all those mask guys that you eventually talk to are going to sound gayer than maybe the guy next who's like not presenting his mask, because he's probably like, well, I didn't have to like overcompensate as much. Yeah.
Yeah. So
and even
I think
bottoming,
it's
we haven't got to like topping and bottoming, but that's another interesting part too. They were in this study that I love, because they would talk about these things where like a part of internalized homophobia is like maybe not allowing yourself to like be a bottom, which is like interesting. Obviously, there's so much more to that. There's pain. There's a lot of other things. But another thing they said to look at is if you're someone who's not willing to be a bottom, like why is that? Is it actually out of pleasure, or is it out of the fact that you are now submissing?
You see it as like a what's the opposite of dominant?
Passive. Which is literally what the heterosexist
term in Spanish
term
is, pasivo.
Yeah, yeah. And women, like in the Western heteronormative context, women are expected to be passive.
Yeah.
So there's something there. Again, it's not saying that it means you are struggling from it if you have it, but they were like, if you are obsessed with masculinity, surrounding yourself by only masculine men or just men, not willing to be a bottom, like these things,
they may be signs.
It's like maybe you need to then go to your therapist and just be like, can we talk about something? Because I'm not sure if this is the thing that affects me.
I just want to end on a specific note. I had a bunch of other studies. I'm not going to go through them, but all to say, these other studies looked at internalized homophobia and found the mental health outcomes are bad. So I think if you find yourself in this position, and we all are on the scale of it, I think like even the most queer, effeminate presenting person who is a gay man, like has to be faced with this in society. But it's worth knowing, if you're listening to this and you're like, this kind of feels like me, that the mental health outcomes are not good.
Yeah.
Of course, there are stressors just from being gay, but they're able to parse these apart and say people who are actually, we can say, have internalized homophobia, it's linked with like depression and anxiety and a lot of other issues.
And body dysmorphia.
Yeah. So,
and severe depression, like bad, like it's bad. So it means like you can, it means it's like therapy vibes. It's like, it means addressing it.
Mm-hmm. And I will say, I know you said as people age, it gets better, but it's worse for older generations. So at least it's becoming less so, I think, because younger and younger people can come out and there's more acceptance around being effeminate. There's more conversations around this. And so I think generationally, hopefully that is like a positive trend towards people like actually getting to be what they want. If you actually are internally hyper-masculine, then you get to be yourself. And if you actually are internally hyper-feminine, you get to be yourself and have less of that fear around being judged for it, knowing that you can just like be accepted by the greater society and also by the queer community to like find people who love you for who you are.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay. That was a big one, but I think it's super interesting.
Yeah.
And like, obviously as to gay men, it's like a lot to talk about. I am so curious about like a lesbian's perspective, or even just like a queer or non-binary trans person's perspective on this conversation, both about gay men and then about their respective communities and like how, I guess ultimately it's like toxic masculinity. How does that like weave itself into those?
Mm-hmm.
Or for lesbians, is there like toxic femininity? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'd be just interested to like maybe bring someone on one day and talk about that. Okay. We will take a little break, but and then
we're about to go away for a weekend with only gay men. And it's like, you know what?
Cancel.
Okay. They better be acting feminine. I'm going to waltz in and be like, we're doing our nails.
You're like, we're dressing up as Drag Race.
Yeah, like, we're definitely watching Drag Race tonight. And if any of them says anything masculine, I'm going to be like, get out.
Okay. We'll be back.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What did we learn this week?
All right, as I said, mine is about Mexico.
Say it in Spanish if you're in Spanish class so well.
You're in Spanish class.
Yeah, hola, ¿cómo estás?
But okay, say it in, how do I say this in Spanish?
That is so embarrassing that I just said that.
Yeah, you're embarrassed. You're internalized. I don't know what. Okay.
Let's do it in Spanish.
Come I on. Can't do
We've
it
been
in
doing
Spanish.
Babble. Okay.
Wait, what are you trying to do?
I'm trying to talk in Spanish.
No, Greg, this pot's been too long. Just let me get this out. We'll talk in Spanish in the future. So I learned this from my
Do you think
Spanish
Bad Bunny
teacher.
Would date me?
No.
You don't think Bad Bunny would
I
date me?
I think he'd
me.
Like you. Like, I think he'd be like, oh, that guy's cool. That guy's like funny.
And he'd
whatever.
Be like, huh, he dresses exactly like me. It's almost like he's been studying me and wants to be me. Okay, continue.
Okay. Learned this from my Spanish teacher. Did a bit of supplementary research, but like, this is a little bit of like, hopefully I'm going to get it right because I know there's some controversy about
So you
this.
Actually think Bad Bunny would like me?
Stop.
Because I actually... That's the
We're talking about
said.
The origin of the word Mexico as pronounced Mexico. So online I did see that there's no definitive proof, but this is what they believe. It's like okay. the etymology of the word.
Okay, cool.
So in Spanish, the letter X, what's it? What is it in Spanish, Greg?
Oh, it's the beer. Dos Equis.
Oh,
Equis.
Good job.
Dos Equis. Because the... Beer.
Two X.
Is it Mexican beer? The two X's. Dos X's.
Gotcha.
And you know, like, we know how to drink that.
Okay. So typically the X's. Letter X is pronounced.
X's. Dos X's.
Okay.
X's. Typically Girl, pronounced. What are you, British?
I think it is X.
Oh, shit. Okay.
It's pronounced as X, right? Like
what?
A KS. Like okay. if you see the word, the letter X, typically in Spanish, you pronounce it X. Okay. So like. Éxito, which means success.
Also, the name of the big grocery chain in Medellin.
Exactly.
Éxito.
Exuberante. Exuberant, right? Okay. So, exuberante. So, why is Mexico spelled with an X if
it's
actually pronounced Mexico? Is actually how you pronounce it. Interesting question, right?
It should be M E J.
J. So, typically, like, it things with Mexico. A J is... Or, yeah, I don't know. Like even when they write like, ha,
it's
ha,
like this.
Ha,
Mitch, listen, Mexico. I think no, like, no, that was French. No, no, it's like this. Mexico.
Mexico.
No, 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 Mitch, listen, it's Mexico.
Thank you so much.
No, but okay. You should listen to me. You know, you need to understand. Mexico.
People do say you have a really good Spanish accent. Okay, so
wait, wow, you're just complimenting.
The
me
name
there.
Of the place Mexico comes from an indigenous language, which is related to like the Aztecs. Apparently, it wouldn't have been called that at the time.
Oh.
Not Spanish. And what happened is in medieval Whoa. Spanish, the letter X was different. So it was closer to the sound sh. So Mexico is like how it would have been pronounced. Eventually, J and X began to sound the same in Spanish. And eventually, modern Spanish ended up changing X to more of the K or X sound, like CH
like
or KS. So... There have my teacher was saying like they actually have been talking about changing the spelling of Mexico so people pronounce it right Mexico
to a J
to put a J to
into
help
that
correct
because it's the more indigenous accuracy
yeah so but that's part of the reason why you're like when you see Mexico spelled with an X it's because that actual pronunciation for Spanish people has changed over the years but the X remained
whoa
thought that was kind of cool
but it is like if you're there you go like Mexico. Like, you don't say Mexico, right?
Yeah, like, people who are Spanish would, or, say like, Mexico. In Latin America would say Mexico, yeah.
In Colombia.
And Oaxaca.
And Ecuador.
You know what I mean? Okay. Argentina.
Argentina.
Oh, wow. You can't do that one.
Argentina.
No. Argentina.
Argentina. It's because you have an Argentinian Perro. Teacher.
Can you do the
Perro.
Other? Okay, you got it. Okay.
Perro.
Okay, what's your
regular? Arriba.
Is, wait, what's arriba up? Is it double R? I don't know that one.
Oh, shit. No, I think
arriba
so.
Arriba or arriba?
Whenever I'd say perro in class, I do always hold it. I'm like, oh yeah, una perro. And they're like, ha ha ha. And I'm
like, good for you. You said yours is kind of depressing, right?
It's extremely depressing, but let's it's okay. Quick. We're going to like do it quick and then we're going to get out of here. Because, okay, so palm oil is bad.
Yeah. So they say, and it destroys the environment, right?
Yeah, okay. So it's unhealthy, obviously, but it's like there's palm oil plantations that they have to like create a lot of deforestation for. Palm oil, the things that it's most in is store-bought bread, which I thought was interesting.
Oh.
I know. It's not like it's the most in that, but these are the most like common products.
Things that you'd buy. Yeah.
Margarine, chocolate, frozen pizza.
What?
Store-bought cookies.
Okay.
Instant noodles.
Wow.
Deodorant and a range of other cleaning products. But I was like, there's something.
All those things.
Okay. I'm like, yeah,
I'm like, instant noodle, my favorite.
This is Mitchell Moffat, my palm oil boyfriend. But there is something interesting about the concept of like convenience and how much it links to palm oil. Like,
yeah.
It is one of those things where it's like,
and I assume like keeping things fresh long or not fresh, but like not rotting longer.
Yes. But, and like truly like the consistency, like gooiness and preservation. Yes. But it's like, if you're wanting to help the information I'm about to tell you, which is extremely depressing, it's like, make your own bread, make your own pizzas. You know
is
what
there
I mean?
Another option?
Like make your own
or
cookies.
Buy bread that doesn't have it. How about that?
Sorry, but
bread's the one that I'm like, I don't really want to make my own bread.
I'm saying cookies, like you definitely can like go to like maybe more like it would be about reading labels
or find a brand
and that, probably like a more expensive brand. That's fine, but I'm like just saying there are things here like that are kind of like represent convenience in a way that it's like sometimes. There's a health aspect, but this is sort of now like it's a ruining the earth aspect. Mm. It's not like it's in these products that everyone like fruit and like,
right.
And like vegetables and these things that like people love that are healthy. Like there's a weird correlation between sort of like unhealthy mass produced things and palm oil, which I was like, this is like enough. This could be the reason why you end up stop eating those things. Whereas a lot of people are telling you it's health. It's like sometimes it doesn't work for people.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So this is so sad, but essentially the palm oil plantations are usually nearby rainforests just based on how they're made. So macaque monkeys, which are endangered and so cute, usually now will split their time between rainforests and palm plantations. Because of the where macaque monkeys live, it's like they're just
in their proximity to palm plantations.
Yeah. Okay. And they're endangered. And they found that the pesticides and chemicals on the palm plantations, if macaque monkeys spend... They were able to tag them. And the longer they spend in the palm plantations, the more likely they're going to die before the age of one because it affects the young babies, these chemicals in the palm plantations, and it's killing them. Mm. It's so sad. And so they're like, okay.
And that's on top of like rainforest destruction anyway. That
yes,
probably destroys
their habitat.
But it's
like literally like they're going in because they want to eat like the palm plants that fall. Like it's obvious. They're like, oh, there's like a bunch of like food there.
But then it's like,
but then they're being exposed to the pesticides and chemicals to raise them. So it's like, when you're eating your Chips Ahoy cookies, you're not thinking about the macaques. Okay. No. So anyways, it's so sad. But they were like, okay, this obviously is like, they want people to know about this to maybe, because the only way you can stop this is like maybe not consuming frozen pizzas or like whatever and trying to like allow the industry to
like self-correct based on like people's purchasing power.
Or they're like, they're now trying to create like more research around how pesticides affect young animals while also figuring out how to create palm plantations that are like smaller or more spread out in ways that the like macaque monkeys will seemingly have to spend less time in them.
Yeah.
But that's very anti-consumerism, anti-capitalism. Like how, like, it's like, obviously it's like, that's so much
the
like goodwill.
Huge.
Yeah.
When it comes to like, you realize, I've seen these like TikToks and analysis online where you take a picture of a grocery store shelf and you realize it's one or two companies that own every single thing, including the things that are like the healthy version that doesn't hurt the macaques. And then there's the regular version. It's like, they're actually both owned by the same
company. And it's like, you're going to, it's like, okay, though, instead of palm oil, go get some Driscoll's banana. And it's like, okay, well, we can go into like why Driscoll's is like the worst. But it is sort of like, one thing that's really bad is palm oil planting. like it's like this, like research on palm oil is like wild.
Well, it's like a trifecta. It's like, it's bad for you.
Yeah.
It's bad for the earth and it's bad for other animals. Like, hopefully that can,
I want to do an episode on palm oil. But
it's just like, we have so many things to think about. And when you're grocery shopping, you're just like, this is like, I am now just like, oh crap, I want to look at the bread I usually get because I don't really think about it that much.
But the shopping around the like end at the like Michael Pollan like shop on the what is it? The exterior.
Yeah, that's where like most of the Whole Foods are.
That's probably where there's less palm oil.
I know, but then we get into this conversation around like eating disorders and not like in general, but I just saw a really good TikTok that was like, it's okay if you eat food that's not just from the outside. Maybe not talking about environmentalism, but so hung up. Like, we're given so much
about
information
the outside of the thing.
Yeah, and they were like, I'm a nutritionist, like, stop. Judge, like, you don't have to think about every little thing you eat in such a crazy micro detail because it's really stressful to be like, never take a thing off the box, like in the shelf that's in the middle of the grocery store.
Wow, I didn't realize it was that pervasive.
It is. It's a really common,
honestly,
which I think it's a very useful thing where you're like, okay, these are all whole foods. Of course, they're like less processed, less healthy, but now we're also in part of a culture that's like so obsessed with every little thing. I get it on the environmental impact end, but when it comes to health, we're told like constantly, like, that's killing you. And it's like, everything in moderation, eat whole foods, eat healthy, but like a bag of chips here and there is not going to kill you. Stop stressing about it.
Yeah. I'm like, I want to call them out. It's like BBC Nutrition, I think is the name of the podcast. It is like, okay, you're an eating disorder podcast.
Cause it's just, I'm like super frustrated. Focused on,
it's literally, your new like episode was like how to get skinny scientifically. Like literally it was like called that. It's like BBC Nutrition. And then there's BBC Science Focus. And I'm just like, you're actually so,
it's just hard,
so
because
frustrating to me when I listen to them. I'm like, why aren't you adding some sort of nuance around like balance, eating disorders? They're all talking about like
just obsessed like, with the it's like that obsession with optimization of every little thing.
And they're like, I'm honestly, I guess I have to question my dark chocolate before bed. It's like,
we're losing,
it's like
all our British listeners.
Yeah, sorry, we are losing the British listeners, but it's like, he's like, I thought that my dark chocolate before bed was okay, but you're telling me it's not. And they're like, no. And he's like, oh, bugger. It's like, that's not an
that's
issue.
Not the problem.
Yeah, it's like, okay, like, or you could be like, no, that is fine. Like, I don't know. Yeah. It's so frustrating. He's like, guess I need to reconsider eating my dark chocolate before bed. Thanks for listening. Okay. Bye, British listeners. Kidding.
Okay, are we done?
I'm British. Okay.
Yeah. Are you like Irish or something?
Imagine me saying they're the same. Canceled.
We got a lot of those this episode. All right. Thank you all so much for listening. And we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.